Turning our attention now to the Mississippi, the Upper Mississippi River, with Reggie McLeod of Winona, Minnesota. He is editor and publisher of Big River Magazine. It's a bi-monthly magazine for people who live or work or play on the Upper Mississippi River. So really pleased to have him with us. He's with us by phone, by the way, and talking about the Mississippi, the Upper Mississippi, with him. And certainly we'll be inviting your questions and comments as we move along today. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Reggie McLeod, good to hear from you. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Larry. Good morning.
Katie Balfus just let me know or reminded me that the Upper Mississippi was recently named a Ramsar Wetland of International Importance.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of wetlands on the Mississippi watershed. I think it drains water from 23 states and parts of Canada even. So it's an awfully big watershed.
And I think it's only the 27th watershed to be named Wetland of International Importance. So it's kind of a big deal.
Oh, yes.
The lots of things we can talk about. The invasive jumping carp have officially moved upriver to Wisconsin and Minnesota. I guess the DNR announced last December it had identified a silver carp taken in a commercial fishing net near La Crosse. How do officials think the carp made it to the Mississippi?
Well, these fish were imported, and I think people were concerned about it at the time. They were imported mainly by catfish farmers in the south, and they brought the fish in to help eat algae and weeds in the catfish ponds to kind of keep them clean. And when the ponds flooded, the carp escaped and got into creeks and rivers and eventually into the Mississippi River and started moving north. Most of the catfish farms are down in the south. And they've been kind of watching it every year. There are three main species that have been moving north, and they're here now, and they're not sure how far north they'll be able to live. You know, at some point it'll be too cold for them, and they're just kind of watching at this point.
Well, you hope it'll be too cold for them.
Yeah, yeah. I hope so. These silver carp are actually dangerous. They can be 40 or 50 pounds, and they leap several feet out of the water, and there are some great little movies on YouTube of people driving their boat through waters that are infested with them, and it looks unreal. There are so many of them leaping into the air, and they've actually leapt into boats and knocked people over in boats, and actually they can be dangerous. I haven't heard of anyone being killed by one yet, but if you're driving a boat or if you didn't have your life jacket on and you got knocked out, they could actually be dangerous.
And aside from that, there are some environmental concerns with them, I expect, as well.
Well, they're displacing a lot of the native fish, and they're still studying that. But in the Illinois River, where they've been around for a long time, they're finding fewer of the native gizzard shad and some of the other fish that eat a lot of algae and plants as well. So they're displacing fish, and the gizzard shad are rather small, and they're really important food for eagles and walleyes and bass. And the silver carp are huge, and the eagles and walleye and bass probably aren't eating very many of them.
No.
So eventually that's going to start affecting the game fish and other game as well.
No, that's too bad.
Yeah.
By the way, you can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, as we talk the Upper Mississippi with Reggie McLeod of Big River Magazine. Email us, too, at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you about your own experiences on the Mississippi or any questions that you may have about it. And I know, Reggie, your magazine has made it a job to get restaurants on the Upper Mississippi River to serve carp. As we were talking about carp here, you're promoting the first annual Big River Carp Connoisseur Challenge. What's the challenge and what's been the response from the river chef community?
Well, it's a contest to find the restaurant near the river that serves the best carp dish. And the idea was is to use, you know, native species to kind of help the commercial fishermen and also maybe to make some kind of dent in this problem with the invasive carp, because carp are prized in many parts of the world as really a special dish. I know I grew up in the Detroit area, and people had carp for Christmas dinner. It was like the most important meal of the year that was reserved for carp. So we decided to have this contest and put down the challenge. Now, so far we have zero entries.
Ah.
We have had inquiries, though. In fact, a fine restaurant in Mineral Point contacted us and said they're going to work on some carp dishes. I won't name them at this point, but they're too far from the river to qualify for the contest. But we'll certainly review these dishes if they do something special with carp. And we've encouraged people when they're dining in fine restaurants on the river to ask about the carp, to see if they have a carp special, or say, oh, I can't find the carp on the menu. Could you help me? And start putting pressure on these guys, because I think they should be able to come up with some pretty interesting carp dishes.
There are probably some listeners out there who have some ideas about how to prepare carp. I'm sure we'll hear from some of them as we move along here today.
I hope so.
But not to be confused with the carp challenge, what is the Mississippi River Challenge 2009, which is scheduled for July 25th and 26th?
Well, there's lots of challenges on the river, I guess. That's a canoe. That's a two-day canoe trip through the Twin Cities. The Twin Cities, 72 miles of river through the Twin Cities, have been designated as a national park. And they don't own all that land, but the Park Service sort of coordinates parks and activities and does a lot of its own activities through there. And Friends of the Mississippi River is a nonprofit environmental group there, and they sponsored this canoe challenge as a fundraiser. And it's a two-day kind of gang canoe trip that starts just upstream from Minneapolis, and we'll paddle the first day to Fort Snelling, which is a state park overlooking the Minnesota and Mississippi rivers. And there'll be a big camp out there. And then the second day, they'll paddle down to Gray Cloud Island, which is almost down to Hastings, Minnesota, which is a total of about 44, 45 miles.
And for the 2 days?
For the 2 days. And I'm signed up. I'm going on it this year, so I'm all excited about that. But there are another big group canoe trip that I should mention, too, is a Mississippi River Rumble, which is an annual trip that's been going on for many years. They always pick a different stretch of the river. And this year, they're paddling from La Crosse to Dubuque. So that's going to be...
That's a nice one. Nice trip.
Yeah, I think that begins on the 26th, actually, just when the Mississippi River Challenge ends. So I'm gonna try to get down there and at least paddle a day or two with these guys this year, too, in the Rumble. And that's just kind of sponsored. It's not a fundraiser or anything, but it's sponsored by a nonprofit group that's based in Dubuque. And there's another one called Taming of the Slough down in the Quad Cities, but that's kind of a triathlon event with paddling and bicycling and running.
Oh.
Down in Rock Island, Moline.
That sounds like fun, too, although I don't think I'd be a contestant in that one. I'm not a speed canoeist.
Yeah, me neither. I've got a solo canoe, and I have it for fishing mostly. I'm not going to win any races with the thing.
Jim in La Crescent has a question or comment. Jim, hi to you.
Hey, good morning to you folks. Reggie, I've got a question for you. You're undoubtedly aware of the CapEx 2020 power line project that proposes a power line between Rochester and La Crosse. And I wonder what your take is on the crossing options that have been proposed, Alma, Winona, and La Crescent, and how that might just play out.
Alma, Winona and La Crescent are the three, yeah.
Yeah,
they're the three macro corridors that have been identified, and if the project goes ahead, in order to get to Wisconsin, it's going to have to cross at one of those three locations.
Yes, and well, as a journalist, I shouldn't have a strong opinion of it, but as a matter of fact, I don't. I guess my strongest opinion is I wish there was more emphasis on conservation so there was less need for more power lines and more power plants. But that aside, it looks like the favored crossing at this point is at Alma. There are power line crossings at all three of these spots already, but this would involve new towers and visually it's a problem. There's going to be construction on the river, and it's pretty contentious. I guess I'd like to see more conservation as my main response to it. Alma seems like probably a good bet because there's already a couple large power plants over there, Darylin power plant, so there's already a lot of transmission facilities there, and I think if it tied into those, there might be some efficiencies there. Mm-hmm. And you can see the power plants for many parts of the river around there. There's some great spots on the river around there, but those smokestacks kind of dominate the skyline on the river around there.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Appreciate your call. Thanks very much for calling. And we've got Carol and Shireen online. We'll get to them in just a minute or two. But our guest today, Reggie McLeod of Winona, Minnesota, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine, will be our guest right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about the Upper Mississippi River here on the Ideas Network, Larry Mueller with my guest Reggie McLeod of Winona, Minnesota, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine. It's a bi-monthly for people who live, work, or play on the Upper Mississippi River. Certainly, if you have a question about the river itself, we got into a little discussion about carp. I know we're going to be talking about that a bit more, but other things as well in the area of traveling along it or on it. Next to it, give us a call. The number 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Reggie, I think we're going to turn to Carol, who's been waiting quite a while. Carol, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hi there. I've been to the headwaters of the Mississippi, to the state forest there. I've stayed overnight at the Hostling International Youth Hostel, and I thought of that while I was waiting. It was a wonderful experience, and I saw the lake where the water starts from. The issue of carp, most of my life spent in Wisconsin has been, I've had the teaching by many that carp is a garbage fish, and I'd like you to discuss that a bit. The other side of that is that I've been given a carp flag from children in Japan who were celebrating the fact that carp is their, I believe it's a national symbol of some sort. And so I just would like to kind of have the worldview as well.
All right. Thanks for calling, Carol. Reggie, comments?
Sure. Well, that's interesting. In Asia, I believe it's the most popular fish. I know it's the most popular farmed fish, and commercial fishermen do catch carp on the Mississippi River and in lakes and that in the Midwest. And a lot of those are sold to markets in the larger cities in Chicago or New York, where many Asian people prize them, as well as people from Eastern Europe. There's even a lot of German recipes for carp. As far as being a bottom feeder, ducks and geese are bottom feeders, and people certainly like to eat ducks and geese. Carp eat a lot of vegetation. They eat tubers and grass. When it floods in the spring, you'll see them out in fields, and I believe they're eating grass. So they don't concentrate a lot of the toxins the way game fish do, where the game fish are high up on the food chain. Carp are right at the bottom of the food chain because they're eating vegetables. The fish advisories for Minnesota and Wisconsin generally agree that it's safe to eat carp of any size caught in the Mississippi River from Minneapolis to the Iowa border once a month or 12 times a year. And in some spots, they say they can even be eaten once a week. And when you get down into Iowa and Illinois, They Iowa puts no restrictions on eating carp from the Mississippi, and Illinois suggests one meal a week from the river, with the exception of the stretch down by the Quad Cities. And it says you can eat carp from that stretch once a month. So it's a pretty clean bill of health, and compared to a lot of game fish, it's probably a lot safer.
And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, maybe somebody's still got that cookbook, put together a little cookbook, must be 20 years ago at least, on carp recipes. And they were trying to promote people eating carp, and there's just a little booklet of recipes about preparing carp. Maybe somebody else remembers that book, and they might still have it order.
I'm going to look for that. I haven't seen that. I just had a book on my desk that I'm reviewing called Fishing for Buffalo, and it's about fishing for the non-game fish, carp, suckers, eel pout, gar, and other rough fish. And they have a lot of carp recipes in there, and it's pretty easy to find smoked carp along the stretch of the Mississippi. Valley Fish in Prairie du Chien has excellent smoked carp, and actually Mike Valley is, I think, at least a third-generation commercial fisherman, and they smoke all kinds of fish, but they have smoked, I think they have smoked sucker, too, carp, sturgeon, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, check that DNR.
I'm going to look for it.
Yeah, it's an older publication. It goes back quite a ways, but I remember it very distinctly. Shireen in Springbrook, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Shireen.
Hi. I wanted to comment on two things. One is there's a little gem of a park in Minneapolis that's called 3 Mile Island or 3 Mile Park, and it has an island in the middle where the blue herons nest. And my daughter is the only park keeper there.
Oh, cool!
And we went down to see it, and it's a beautiful, and they have a beautiful interpretive center, a building that's really designed for kids, and it runs all along. It's long and slender, runs along the Mississippi. And the question I had is, are goldfish members of the carp family?
Yes, they are.
Because in Potosi, Wisconsin, there was a brewery, used to call it Potosi beer years ago when I was a little kid, and they had goldfish that were enormous. They were many feet long, and they were in their big pond behind the brewery.
Yeah.
And they always told us those were carp.
Yeah, in fact, the brewery is opened again now as a brew pub, which is kind of an interesting place. But I used to live in Milwaukee, and I lived on the east side, and I had to walk across the Milwaukee River every morning to catch the bus to work. I worked in a park out on the west side, and when I'd walk across the bridge at about 7 in the morning, I'd look down into the Milwaukee River, and there was usually a whole school of goldfish right up under the surface. It was beautiful because they were probably close to a foot long, a lot of them, 10, 12 inches long. And they were just big goldfish, and for some reason they were there every morning. They were up to something. But I always got a big kick out of that.
Thanks, Shireen. And yes. And that, by the way, that 3 Mile park, have you been there, Reggie?
No, and that's, I've been to most of the parks up in the Twin Cities along there. I'm thinking that's a stretch of the river in Minneapolis.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I know where, yeah, I have been there. I hadn't heard it called 3 Mile Park. It's just there's so much parkway along the Mississippi River in the Twin Cities and many parks. So, yeah, I know where that is. It's,
and my daughter's the only park keeper that works there.
Sounds like a great job.
Yeah,
it sounds like it. Thanks, Shireen.
Yes, bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Joanne in Princeton. Next. Joanne, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, thanks for calling.
Okay, about 30 years ago, the guys used to go out and spear washtubs full of carp from the Germania Marsh area and bring them in and clean them, and then they would smoke a bunch of them, and us gals would can them.
Sure.
And you can them with a little bit of mustard and ketchup, and they tasted, then you could use them just like salmon for salmon patty, salmon loaf. They were delicious. So you can get a lot of carp that way.
All right. So there you have it. There's one way to do it.
Yeah, I used to bow hunt for carp when I was a teenager. I did that for a while, too. And another easy recipe is pickled carp. There was a commercial fisherman here in Winona where I live that sold pickled carp, and I thought it was better than the pickled herring. It was quite good. and easy to fix, and that pickling would dissolve the bones, too. The acid vinegar in there would dissolve the bone, so it was really good.
Yeah.
That's right. My sister-in-law used to do that, too, so
yeah,
I forgot about that.
Thanks, Joanne.
You bet.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Lawrence in Madison next. Hi, Lawrence.
Hello. Mr. Big River, I have a comment about the Potosi Brewery.
Okay.
Well, I'm 93 years old, born in Cassville, Wisconsin. And when I was little, the pond outside the river had large trout in it, not just goldfish. And I think another thing the listeners would be interested in, when I was 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, two creeks at Cassville both had native trout in them. And how things have changed over these years. Now just a few chubs, I guess.
Yeah.
But here's a living person that knows how beautiful and wonderful the streams were around Cassville in the early part of the last century.
Oh, thanks for calling, Lawrence. I appreciate that very much. Comment, Reggie?
Yeah, they have a great spring there at the old Potosi Brewery. And I don't know that they have fish in there. I was out there this winter because they just recently reopened. But they actually channel the spring under the floor of the brew pub. So when you walk in, there's a piece of clear glass there, and you can look down and see the spring running under your feet. It's kind of fun. But that spring is still doing pretty well. I'm not sure how. I think they use that water for the brewery still.
Lawrence, thank you again. I appreciate that call. And I remember the ad for Potosi. It was something like "Good Old Potosi." That was the little saying and jingle that they had along with that original brewery. Well, someone called in and said the book that I referred to earlier from the Department of Natural Resources was called "A Fine Kettle of Fish." And it's now out of print, but you might be able to get a copy from the DNR. There should be somebody there that might be able to photocopy something off for you, Reggie.
Okay, I'll look for it.
Yeah, "A Fine Kettle of Fish." I remember that now.
Thanks.
Shirley in Cedarburg. Let's go to you now. Hi, Shirley.
Hi. Oh, this is a thrill. If you want the best catfish that you could imagine, I hope the little restaurant on the beach at Brownsville is still open.
No, the sandbar, right?
Yeah. They had catfish cheeks, deep fried, and they were to die for. We used to camp right across from Brownsville, and maybe up river a tiny bit. There was a donut-shaped sandbar from dredging, and some trees were left on it, so it was a perfect place to camp. We had shade. We had this path that was around the top of the donut. We watched turtles laying eggs. We swam in the river. By the way, I was born in the bottomlands at La Crosse, across the river in Pettibone.
Oh, okay, sure.
And it now is a park. But I had the best childhood anybody could imagine, climbing trees and making tree houses and tree swings, and a couple of them were ropes that went out over the river and you'd drop off. And we were the first in spring to swim. We were the first on the ice to skate. The memories just...
It's great memories.
I miss it just desperately.
Yeah, there's still a lot of wild places on the river, and that whole stretch from the Chippewa River down to the Quad Cities is National Wildlife Refuge. So it's still in pretty good shape, pretty pristine, and there's free camping available and on that refuge land. You can stay in one camp for up to 2 weeks, and you don't have to register anything. I mean, there are certainly guidelines and things you have to do and that you can't do, but it's... pretty nice, and there aren't too many places in the country that are like that anymore.
Well, where I used to live is now a boat
sure, there's
storage. Marina of some sort, yeah.
And but behind where I lived was the West Channel, and then behind that is a crane sanctuary.
Sure, I was there last last summer. I paddled through there where the heron rookery.
Heron, that's right.
Sure.
Don't you love it?
Yeah, I used to live up on the ridge above Brownsville, so I'm pretty familiar with that area. And that beach has now got big houses on it, and a lot of those people are subscribers to Big River, so I'm not going to complain about it or anything. But it's changed, and they used to have a nice little bar there called the Sandbar that had catfish and bands on the weekend and that.
It used to be the designated camp keeper, because if all of us, there were maybe 15 or 20, would come by boat, and if everyone had to go back to work, that left the island deserted. But if I stayed, then everyone could leave their tents up, and I've been through some storms.
and a lot of bad weather and a lot of good weather, I'll bet. You know, it's a great memories, Shirley. Thanks for sharing that with us. You know, I think, you know, Reggie, that there are a lot of people like Shirley who have lived along the river and have such fine memories.
Oh, certainly. There's, the folks at UW-La Crosse, and I've heard of some other projects where they've interviewed people that grew up on the river and worked on the river, a lot of them, even before the locks and dams were built in the 30s. And I've heard some of those recordings and read some of those transcripts, and it's really enjoyable. It's really interesting. It was even wilder than it is now. It's still pretty wild, but it was even wilder then.
Some of Kenny Selway's books are fine books.
Yeah. Kenny Selway writes for us on occasion. In fact, I think we were the first outfit he wrote for. He did used to do a monthly column on kind of the changing seasons for us way back when. But then he also co-wrote the book The Last River Rat, which is kind of about his life trapping in the backwaters there by Buffalo City, Wisconsin. And more recently he wrote Tales of a River Rat, which is kind of a follow-up. And I he's still working on stories. We published a story on Beaver Family in the January-February issue that he wrote, and I suspect that's going to end up in a book. And, you know, about a year ago, the video that was made of him called The Last River Rat won a number of prizes. And I think the man who filmed it, Neil Reddick, who lives down by Prairie du Chien, I think he won some prizes for that as well. It's done pretty well.
Yeah, it has. It was a great video. Neil, I've interviewed Neil, and of course Kenny have interviewed as well a couple of times or three times. And there's some good books and a great video as well. It's talking about your magazine. Your May June summer travel issue has a list of 43, I believe, overlooks, beautiful overlooks of the Upper Mississippi.
Yeah, and we should mention our website, because last week we created a Google map that pinpoints the location of all of those overlooks, so it'll help people to find them. And we said 43 in the magazine, and then after it was printed, I counted, and there are actually 45 of them. So I shouldn't admit that, but I just kept adding. There are so many new ones, and some of that is because land trusts have acquired a lot of beautiful spots. Mississippi Valley Conservancy in La Crosse has quite a few new ones, and the head of that, Tim Jacobson, took me around to some of them on a blustery spring day. It's amazing. They own a good share of the bluff line around La Crosse, and they also acquired some down by Cassville that are pretty neat. And I haven't. Usually when we write about overlooks, we only write about ones that we visited, and there were so many new ones this year that I didn't get to all of these. So I've got a list this summer of places I need to get out and check out firsthand. But I love these overlooks, and a lot of them have Indian mounds up there, and everyone is different. Some are very accessible. You can drive right up to them, and some you have to do some pretty tough uphill hiking to get to. And, it's a lot of fun. I'm excited about visiting these new ones this summer.
Well, there's some beautiful overlooks. That is for sure. And this issue is beautiful too. You've got some wonderful photography in here as well as some great stories. What's your website, by the way?
It's BigRiverMagazine.com. So that's no spaces. Just type in BigRiverMagazine.com. And should I mention our 800 number?
Sure, absolutely.
1-800-303-8201 for subscription information or anything else. And if you go to our website, on the upper left-hand corner of the homepage, it says new, and under there is the link to the map that shows where all of these overlooks are. And most of those overlooks then have links that give you detailed instructions on how to get up there, or they give you information about the park, if they're in a park, and so on. So there's a lot of useful information on there, as well as in the magazine, of course.
You want people to look at the magazine.
Yeah, you should look at the magazine, too. There's a lot of information in the magazine and a nice map with all these overlooks.
And that's BigRiverMagazine.com for the website, and the 800 number is 1-800-303-8201.
Yes.
Okay, let's go to Frank in Ferryville next. Frank, hello to you.
Good afternoon. I have two questions. I wonder what the restrictions are on the towboats that go up and down the river, and I'm not about what they dump or don't dump, and I'm not talking perhaps as much about toilet kinds of things as I am other kinds of things that they might want to get rid of. And number two, what's the restriction on the railroad when they spray along the side of the river to kill all the foliage, including substantially sized trees, and obviously a lot of that spray is going in the river?
All right. Reggie?
Yeah, that's kind of a gripe of mine with the railroads, because I know a few years ago there were suddenly a lot of dead trees appeared next to the railroad, and they shouldn't spray on a windy day, for one thing. And they're supposed to control it, and it's not supposed to drift. But you can, as you drive along the river, you can see that it has drifted, and there are big spaces where all the trees are dead. And but they're not supposed to do that. And usually they don't. Usually they do a pretty good job of restricting it. But sometimes they might be spraying on days that they shouldn't, or they might be using too much.
The towboats.
The towboats, as is true with every other boat, they're not allowed to dump any garbage on the river. Now, they used to find, trash bags on the islands or floating around on the river, and they'd open it up and there'd be things from, Mississippi or Louisiana, and, kind of clues that they had come from a towboat. I think the DNRs have been stricter about that, and the refuge people as well. I think when they find those things, they're a little more likely to try to track someone down and get on their case. So I think the tows and boaters in general are better at cleaning up after themselves than they used to be. I go on river cleanups now and then, and for a few years we adopted an island that everyone from the office would go on and clean it up. And it was almost disappointing. Sometimes we'd go up to clean it up, and there wasn't very much out there.
Well, yeah.
I think people are a little more conscientious than they used to be about that sort of thing.
And that's good news.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Reggie, it's always a pleasure. I thank you very much for being with us. And again, if you want to take a look at Reggie's magazine, go to their website, which is BigRiverMagazine.com, and you can find out how to order copies and get online to subscribe. Or just call 800-303-8201, 303-8201. Thanks again, Reggie. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry. And I should mention quickly that it also lists places that sell the magazines on the website. If you click around, you can find a list, and maybe there's a place near you.
Perfect. Thanks, Reg. Reggie McLeod, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine, our guest. Always fun to have him on, and great to call a little attention to that Upper Mississippi River. Take a look at the magazine. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll talk home renovation and repair issues, some plans and ideas with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.